Wrestling, the opening of this show, this one show, is going to be a little bit of a departure. It's going to take less than 2 minutes, so please bear with me. We're recording this on May 30th, 2019, and yesterday, for the first time, Robert Mueller spoke publicly for the first time after months of investigating a very serious and sensitive matter. And I feel that he made it clear to Congress, but more importantly, to the American people, that there is only one wicked good wrestling podcast out there, and it's the one you're listening to, Stick to Wrestling. Mueller further concluded that this is the podcast of the people, and it is that an influencer. He used math and science to demonstrate unequivocally that if you give us 60 minutes, we'll give you a Mondo and Bitchin' podcast. And let me bring on my convivial co-host, Sean Goodwin. Sean, how are you today?
Well, 10 seconds into that intro, I started to swallow my tongue until I got the joke you were going for. So I feel better now than I did 30 seconds ago.
It's the podcast that makes you sweat.
Yes, let's get back. Facebook page. I just found out we are up to 518 members on the Facebook page. It's like a mob now.
It is a torch-wielding mob. Yes,
it is,
sir.
A movement. It is a dusty road-sized movement now.
So, yeah, we invite you to join our Facebook page. Just put in Stick to Wrestling and join it. You know, I'm being very serious right now when I say that things seem to be going great in Stick to Wrestling land. And I'm basing a lot of that on the Facebook page because I know how many people download this show every week. It's kind of a lot. I have no idea, no way of knowing who's just listening from the website. But once again, because of the Facebook page and the amount of traffic we're getting, it really seems like we're going in a good direction, and that is important to me.
It is as we've discussed most times we talk about the Facebook page, it's a companion piece. Like they have a PBS. When you give them $30, you get a Facebook page, I guess. But I put videos down there. I put a video of the other day of today, actually. It was between Bob Orton Jr. Bob Orton Sr. and Hans Schmidt from 1953 in Chicago. It's fantastic. But we'll put matches like that from Memphis and around the country up there all the time. So, and we discuss things on the show. We discuss things off the show. But it's always Stick to Wrestling, as you like to say.
Yes, indeed. I mean, just today I put up the 33 years ago they had the tournament for the UWF, the first ever UWF championship won by Terry Gordy. And we were all talking about that. And it was wicked cool.
So John decided that we are all in just too good of a mood. And so the topic for this week is what? That you're going to break us from this good mood and send us all into a depression?
Before I send you that topic, and this is my own fault, I got a little bit out of sync, as it were. If you enjoy this podcast, it is ad-free. It is, we don't charge for it. But if you enjoy it and you'd like to give us a tip for serving up a tasty podcast, please donate at ProWrestlingArchives.com, and of course, I share with Sean. And you know what's funny? I like it when people give us odd amounts, like $11.20. I don't know where that came from, but thank you to the person who sent it. And if you are so inclined, please donate. If you don't donate, but you listen anyway, we thank you for just listening. And the topic for today is the 1986 decline of world-class championship wrestling, and I have gone on.
Just one quick thing. When I got on with Lou before the show, and I brought up the topic, Lou's reaction was, and I quote, "Really?" And I may be giving it a little too much enthusiasm. This may be one of the most depressing wrestling years in history.
It was definitely an interesting wrestling year. It was almost like when a country goes to war. 84 was that year. 86 was like, okay, there are going to be casualties. We're no longer excited about this. We're hungry. Our buildings have exploded, etc. Coming into 86, I want to say there were five major promotions in the U.S. And no, I'm not saying the AWA was as big as the WWF, but the AWA was still, I would call, the major league. And by the end of 86, you know, both the AWA and World Class were no longer that. They were definitely mid-majors. The big league, so to speak, was WWF, NWA, and Mid-South, or UWF.
So, okay, so we have a special guest to help us, to guide us through this joyous occasion. A historian, as you would like to say, John?
He's definitely a wrestling historian. I follow him on Twitter. You definitely should as well. You should follow me, too. John McAdam, it's easy to find on Twitter. Two guys hitting each other with the chairs. Let me introduce Seth Hansen, his first podcast appearance. Seth, thank you for coming on. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Glad to have you on. So I know that you are a big World Class fan. You've interacted with Kevin Von Erich on Twitter. Like 1986, can you give me some of your general thoughts on World Class during this year?
Well, I don't have a lot of good thoughts on it.
Well, hold on, John. Before we get to that, let me just set the scene really quickly, okay? Because it wasn't always dark and murky and down. Because I'm looking right now at the Christmas Day. This is one of the Star Wars cards. Christmas Day 85, Reunion Arena, 14,000. Nice crowd. The main event was Kevin.
Nice crowd.
Was Kevin Kerry and Lance Von Erich, which, by the way, kind of puts the kibosh on how wildly unpopular Lance was, beating Michael, Terry, and Buddy in the Lights Out match. So at this point. They're a hot product.
What date was this?
This was December 25th, 1985.
Oh, wow. Okay. I was completely unaware of that. For some reason, I thought – I mean, was the main event of that show Rick Rude and Iceman Parsons?
The main event here was Kevin, Kerry, and Lance beating Michael, Terry, and Buddy in a Lights Out match.
Okay. I'm questioning that, and I'll tell you why. And let me set the stage coming into 1986. The World Class had an unbelievably hot run starting right around the middle of 1982. Kerry Von Erich and Ric Flair a couple of times drew $100,000 houses, which was a big deal in 82. Then, of course, Christmas night 82, we have the big angle with Kerry and Flair. And they had three huge years. They had the Von Erichs versus Freebirds feud. Then they turn around and they have the Kerry and Kevin against Chris Adams and Gino Hernandez. Now, that had pretty much had its run on Labor Day. They had a hair match where Gino and Chris lost. They should have ended the feud there, but they didn't. Sean, I think that Christmas night – they had a match at the Sportatorium. They had a show at the Sportatorium where the main event was Kerry and Kevin against Gino and Chris in a cage. And the Von Erichs, the titles were held up, I think. No, that doesn't make sense. Gino and Chris still had the tag team titles. But Gino and Chris had their initial
split up. They're listed on this card, too. Kevin and Kerry defeated Chris and Gino by disqualification.
Okay, and that was the result. So I got to question that source. I don't think they're going to have the Von Erichs in a Lights Out match, and the Freebirds really weren't back yet. I don't know. But anyway, so that's what we're leading into. 85 was hot. Coming into 1986, we've got Rick Rude as the American heavyweight champion. New guy. He looked like he could – you know, maybe carry the heel side. Gino and Chris were still around, but it definitely looked like they were breaking up. And the Freebirds return unexpectedly. They run an angle where Terry Gordy once again was the referee and stormed out of a match. But I definitely didn't see this coming. And I think this happened right before – I think this happened like Christmas week 85 – but it didn't air up here until, like, you know, the first week of 1986. The Von Erichs were having a match in Fort Worth, and they were attacked by all three Freebirds. Seth, have you seen that?
I've just seen the famous clip of the orchestra pit comment.
Okay. Because,
Go ahead. Where Mark Lawrence, you know, proclaim, I can't remember the quote, but I've seen a clip of it, yes, the Fort Worth return.
Oh, wait a minute. Mark said something completely crazy. Like, you know, I can't. He said something about evil has struck world-class championship wrestling or something completely nuts. As soon as the show ends, it'll come to me. But, yeah, the Freebirds were back, and they were heels. And, I mean, Sean, you watched world-class wrestling on Boston television this whole time. The Freebirds showed up in 82. They were there all of 83. They were there full-time until, like, the fall of 84. And then until, like, you know, end of 84 into 1985, they were still making appearances on World Class. What was your initial reaction when the Freebirds came out and attacked the Von Erichs?
Do you mean for the first time or when they came back?
When they came back at the end of 1985, or was it early 86? I'm not sure.
I was excited because I was like, fantastic. This is what they really needed, but it wasn't the same. I mean, as you got farther into it, there was something missing that was there the first time. And I'm not sure what it is.
My reaction was, and this is, you know, I want to explain, I wasn't reading newsletters yet, so you can't blame the newsletters for jading me. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I was tired of the Von Erichs versus Freebirds, probably late 83. And the feud stuck around for another 9 months. They had the Bad Street match at Texas Stadium, which you would think ended it, but it didn't. They had another Bad Street match in Fort Worth, July 4th. So to me, that feud, you know, felt never ending. And now it's back less than a year later, or a year and a half later. And I remember just being like, oh my God, I can't believe this. But you're right. It almost did feel like something was missing.
Seth, what could that have been? Did you notice a missing spark the second time when they came back?
Well, I think every time you try to recreate the magic, there's always something that's missing. And you can just never bring – I mean, once you do it the first time, that's obviously going to be, you know, a classic. But I just think that, you know, it was never as exciting as the first treatment. It lacked something.
I like what you just said. You can't. It's really hard to recreate the magic, and that's what they went for. And I just think they went in a really bad direction. That was just, I don't know. I mean, someone might be saying, okay, well, what did you want to do? And I really don't have an answer to that. But it just wouldn't have been bringing in the Freebirds again. I could see them doing it, like maybe planning on doing it mid-87-ish. But I felt like it was just way too early. I don't know. I mean, and you had Michael Hayes, who was one of the greatest talkers in the sport. You had Terry Gordy, who I felt was good enough to be NWA champion. Buddy Roberts was Buddy Roberts, but we knew what he was doing there. But like I said, I just felt like it was too early. So that was the first kind of negative thing that happened in World Class. The second thing, they finalized the split between Chris Adams and Gino Hernandez. Now, I've said this before. I don't know if I've said it on this show. It looked like Chris Adams and Gino Hernandez splitting was an obvious thing. I think it was obvious before the cage match where, you know, the cracks showed in the foundation. And it was just a logical thing that was going to happen. But to this day, I think they turned the wrong guy.
Yep. Thinking the same thing. No question about it.
And I've had people say to me, oh, you know, Gino Hernandez, boy, it's tough to make him a babyface. Let Gino just go out there and be Gino. I mean, don't be slapping autographs out of people's hands, but just let him be Gino himself, the guy that he is, as a babyface. I think it would have worked. Plus, I never, you know, Chris Adams, I thought was a good babyface in Portland before he went to World Class. I thought he was a good babyface in World Class. But when they turned him, and I think I've said this before, but it was like he couldn't stop being a heel. He was always speaking in that kind of snide tone. Like he would be doing an interview as Babyface, and he would look at the camera and said, "You people are going to see me." You don't say "you people" to people. Seth, any thoughts on Hernandez and Adams and what went down?
I think that would have been very interesting to see Gino as a babyface.
It had been a while.
Gino had been a babyface.
Turned late 78.
Gino had been a babyface and a successful babyface in San Antonio, in Houston, in Detroit. He can do it. And he's a much more believable baby. It's like when he turned on Tully. Tully was the far more obnoxious of the two, just like Chris is, or Chris was.
Yeah. You know, and you're right. He was a babyface 1983, very briefly in Southwest before Gino flaked out and left the business. But then something else, you know, I mean, in a way, I guess it didn't matter who turned because Gino died. I believe it was February 4th, 1986. And this, you know, was this a time, I'll ask you this, Sean, because you were old enough to have an opinion. Did you ever feel like, okay, a lot of people are like dying in this promotion?
Yeah, absolutely. By this point, yes, absolutely. There was just something – I've brought this up before when I say that I wouldn't give anybody out of Dallas at this time the world title. It was like Georgia in 83. There was just something weird going on. That, I mean, I wasn't smart enough to know what it was. So, you know, I was 10 or whatever, 11, 12. But there was definitely something going on. I mean, you shouldn't be having this many catastrophes happening all the time.
I mean, this – I think Gino was only the second one. But it came, you know, 2 years after David Von Erich died, and you're just like, wow, you know, these two guys in their 20s just dropped dead. And obviously I had no idea. We talked a little bit about the questions surrounding Hernandez's death in the last show. But I mean, I said this last week, I went 13 years thinking the guy just partied himself to death and OD'd.
Seth, how do you think Gino would have worked as a babyface? Do you think they would have held him back because the Von Erichs were there?
I think that any time a babyface, and I mean, we've seen several cases of it, any time a babyface gets more popular than a Von Erich, they get pushed down the ladder a little bit. You know, I don't know. It would have been interesting to see Gino, you know, if the fans would have believed in him as a babyface.
I think they might not. That's actually a good point. I don't know if they would have believed in him, but I think, you know, Jim Cornette once – he talked about when the Midnight Express turned. This is late 1988, and how when Paulie came in and, you know, hit Jimmy with the phone and Jimmy got all bloodied up, Jim felt like that the fans sided with the Midnight Express – because, okay, Jim Cornette's an asshole, but he's our asshole. And I think the fans would have sided with Gino and gotten behind him because he had looks, he had charisma, and he was their asshole.
It's the exact same angle as it did in San Antonio with Tully, except they did it the right way. And it worked then.
Yeah. I was saying at the time, you know, 85, 86. I mean, when they did the split, they made it obvious that, okay, Chris Adams is going to be the babyface in this. But at the time, I thought it should have been Gino. And to this day, I think it should have been Gino. So now we have the split. The world class is counting on Von Erichs versus Freebirds and Chris Adams versus Gino Hernandez as being the feuds that are going to carry them. One of those feuds went down the tubes when Gino passed away. You know, just another bullet hole for the promotion. Now, here's something. Probably a little bit, I want to say it was January or February, that they announced that the World Class Wrestling Association was splitting from the NWA. They were taking their American championship, their top championship, and converting that into a world title. So Rick Rude is now considered by World Class the world's heavyweight champion. Seth, what are your thoughts on, you know, Rick Rude as world champion, and probably more importantly, World Class seceding from the NWA and creating their own world title?
Well, I think that Rick Rude just looked like a guy that you know, was a champion. He just had a great look about him and was, but I don't know. The NWA, you know, was always a part of, you know, Texas. And I just thought it looks a little Bush League to make your own champion after you've been, you know, having the NWA champion come in for all these years. And
no, I agree with you. I mean, no. that's one side of it. Sean, any thoughts that you might have?
I'm not getting any more optimistic about it. It looked desperate. If they were going to do this, and they should have done it, if they were, because the NWA was going to crash and burn. But I mean, and you could already see them pulling Flair's, visits. So they should have done it. But when you do it, when they did it, it looks like they're doing it out of weakness, as opposed to doing it, say, somewhere in 83 or 84. If they did it then it looks like they're doing a power play. I would have done it when Kerry won. Make him like their company world champion right there.
When Kerry won in 80, that would have been a hell of a double cross. Wow.
Not necessarily double crossing Rick, but I'm saying I would have had Kerry have, as opposed to having the title switch there, or I would have had Kerry have some kind of tournament and just say we're above
this. You know what they
could
have done? Although this, like I said, this would have been brass balls. They could have said, okay, Kerry won the NWA title. We're giving the NWA title back to Ric Flair. Here you go, Rick. You can just have it. And yeah, we're setting up our own world championship this was their excuse from breaking away from the NWA. They were complaining that throughout history, the NWA champion would come to Dallas and intentionally get disqualified when he was losing and escape with the belt. And it went all the way back to Fritz Von Erich, you know, challenging Dory Funk Jr. and Dory losing matches but escaping with the title. And here we are with Ric Flair constantly doing it. That was their logic. And they said that the world-class World Heavyweight Championship could not – if you're that champion, you can't get disqualified. If you are, you lose the title. You can't get counted out. If you are, you lose that title. Any thoughts on those championship rules, Seth?
I don't really have too much to say about that, but it was different, I guess. I don't know.
As far as I know, no other championship. They had championship matches where if someone were disqualified, they would lose the title, like Texas Stadium, Kerry versus Flair. But I don't think there was ever a title that could change hands on DQ before. Sean, any thoughts for us?
Well, they did have the title. It was never used, but in Memphis, the title could change hands on the countout. You have a famous bit from Memphis where Flair and Lawler, and Flair gets counted out, and Jerry starts yelling, "I get the title." That was why he said that, because – and they never used it. That's why most people don't know that. But anyway, that's – my problem is how they booked it. These were Rude's opponents. Okay, you said you have a brand new world championship. Ta-da, this is the greatest thing ever. And his opponents included for the first couple of months Adidas, Jerry Allen, Missing Link, Steve Simpson, Brickhouse Brown, and Iceman Parsons. There were four defenses against Lance, Kevin, or Kerry. They were never the main event, the title. They devalued their own title immediately.
They did. It was almost like the Von Erichs were too busy for their own company's world championship. And to make things worse, they, you know, as soon as they put this rule in, sometimes the champion, in order to maintain interest in a program, the typical formula was, okay, champion gets DQ'd, now it's time for a rematch. Well, they can't do that anymore, so they kept booking their champions in non-title matches. And as soon as the champion's in a non-title match, you know what's going to happen.
They booked the six-man belt over their own world title, and that's fine. That's the match that's going to be over. But don't make a singles world title and devalue it immediately. I mean, that's unbelievable. Root had no chance.
No. And I'm going to say something. There are some people out there who are not going to like what I'm about to say because they were friends with the guy. I think bringing in Percy Pringle as Rick Rude's manager was a huge mistake. I did not think he was a good manager. And I thought he kind of made Rick Rude look a little bit Bush League. Like, why would a world champion have this guy as a manager? Seth, any thoughts on Percy Pringle?
I mean, I thought it just Rude, a guy like Rude would not need somebody like that. Look like Percy Pringle as a manager.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, Rude was this, you know, put together tough guy and very serious, and Pringle was just his comedy never worked on me. Sean, any thoughts on Pringle?
Pringle's fine. The issue is how they're using him. Seth just nailed. What are you putting him with Rude for? Okay, where's Paul Ellering? That's what you need. You know, that's the guy you need for him, or even J.J. Dillon with the, you know, the business suit or something like that. That's the guy you need for him, not Percy Pringle. So it was just you didn't put him in the – you're not putting your own guys in the spot to succeed. You completely killing Rude right out of the gate.
Yeah, you're putting him in a tough spot. There was – I remember a TV match – and Seth, you're the historian. Help me out here. I think I remember. I'm doing terrible here. Kerry losing to Rude by pinfall on TV. Not clean, but he lost on TV. Either of you guys remember that?
I'm drawing a blank on that one.
Okay, Sean. I think it was early in Rude's reign, but like I said, I could be wrong.
Okay, so they had him – Rude lost to Kerry?
No, Kerry lost to Rude by pinfall on TV. I think I remember this.
Okay, let me see.
Maybe it was before – maybe it was when Rude was still American champion. I'm not sure. But I remember being like, wow, Kerry just got pinned. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Well, it was just the number of times he was in there with them. And the fact that he was always – it was like a WWF card. You'd have the champion coming out right after, like right before the first intermission. And then you'd have the main event later.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that. So you know, and here's the thing, WCW, or World Class, excuse me, they might have been a little bit ahead of the curve here by declaring their own world champion, because at this point, Crockett, you know, dates on Flair are becoming more and more difficult. And, you know, I couldn't tell the future back then, but I mean, pretty soon Ric Flair is not going to be available at all. The only way, starting, I think, like fall of 85, the only way you were going to get Ric Flair to defend the NWA title is if you brought in all of Crockett's guys, or some of Crockett's top guys, at least. And, you know, people would come out and see that show, and then they would not come back for the regular promotions matches, the home promotions matches, because, you know, they would just wait for the big stars who were on TBS to come back.
They played the whole thing. You have to be able – they were already limiting Flair's dates by 84. I mean, not to the extent it got, but, I mean, you have to be able – to see where they're going with this and make the move early when you're hot. You don't sit there when, you know, when you're not as hot and then try it. And I just love the devaluation. Rick really had meaning Rude. I'm just stunned he gets blamed for this at all. I mean, there is nothing he could have done.
No, I personally don't see anyone blaming Rude. So anyway, spring of 1986, the promotion's still fine. You know, it's still major league enough. And then we have the Parade of Champions show. And they did something interesting. They were like, okay, we're going to have a fan vote for who Rick Rude is going to defend the world title against. And it was a fan balloting, but wait, you cannot vote for Lance or Kerry or Kevin Von Erich because they're competing in the six-man tag team match. And I remember being taken aback by this. I'm like, wait a minute, they're not going to have one of the Von Erichs challenging for this championship at the Parade of Champions. Seth, did you have a reaction to that?
I've seen the match, but I didn't know I guess I didn't know about that. There was a vote on it.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was pretty creative on their part. I mean, I'm not sure why they did it. World Class didn't exactly need a mailing list like the WWF did. Sean, share your thoughts with the world.
It basically proves the fact that they're putting the six-man belt over their own world title.
Yeah.
They just gave him no chance. And who won the voting for that?
There really wasn't much choice. Bruiser Brody won the ballot. You know, one guy I want to talk a little bit about, they brought him in around this time, was Steve Simpson, and he's not a favorite at all of the internet or the newsletter world back then. But Steve Simpson got over. I mean, in his role as like what, the number four, number five babyface, I thought he did a really good job. Seth, do you have any thoughts on Steve Simpson?
I thought he was a pretty good, babyface of that era.
Yeah, he fit in well in World Class. He was a little bit small, but at the same time, you know, consider his position on the card. I thought he was a positive in this era. Sean, any thoughts?
He was a blonde Brian Adidas. Okay, it was the same. It was pretty much your typical du jour Von Erich lackey, sometimes they happen to break out like Adams did, but he's fine. Yeah, he got over because he got the rub from the Von Erichs.
Yeah,
which, by the way, can we get into Lance here while we're discussing this? Because I mean, and I'm starting to believe you here more and more, the fact that the Lance thing would have worked if they didn't have the second raid. And then Fritz had to shoot himself in the foot.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I don't know what happened between Fritz Von Erich and, you know, Ricky Vaughn, Lance Von Erich. Whatever it is, I mean, it had to be pretty bad because Fritz
just
burned down the barn to get rid of the rats.
Oh, I know, because when Dave – I think David Manning was involved too, but when Ken Mantell came back after his he walked up early to Bill Watts, where he took half the roster, and then when he came back the second time, he started Wild West. And
right.
one of the first guys he signed was Lance.
Yeah,
that's right. why Fritz got mad.
That is why Fritz got mad. But well, we talked about this last week. Fritz should have just left it alone. But anyway, so we get to the Parade of Champions show. Chris Adams has returned. After being blinded by Gino Hernandez, and he's wearing a patch over his eye. Now, they're giving a huge push at this point to the Great Kabuki. And it's not that I didn't like the Great Kabuki. I really liked him. But he's been there forever at this point. He's been there for 5 years. The business has changed over those 5 years. He was a small guy, and he got away with that 81, 82. Now, I don't know. And he's managed by Michael Hayes. And they book a match with Kabuki at Texas Stadium where it's him against four consecutive opponents. And the fourth opponent is Chris Adams. And Chris Adams beats Kabuki in the fourth match. I just felt this was absolutely bizarre booking because you're putting Chris Adams, who is an asset, in that position. Sean, Seth, can you give us any thoughts on, like, what did you think of the 1986 Texas Stadium show?
It was a fun show for what it was, but the last couple matches were fun. But I just think that Kabuki loses that aura without Jerry Hart. He's just... They completely wasted him. I mean, he's just the character of Kabuki. I mean, even putting him with Sunshine. Oh,
I know. I know. I mean, trying to use him as, you know, wrestling had this thing. George Steele turned babyface in 1985. And the promotions, a lot of promotions tried to recapture that. World Class did it with Kabuki and the Missing Link. Missing Link eventually went to Mid-South and tried to do that. I mean, Sean, any thoughts from your end?
Yeah, well, with Sunshine, there happens to be a trend with all the with Sunshine, she's the common denominator here. The reason they're doing it is that they're figuring the miracle she pulled by making Chris Adams look like a sympathetic character, which, by the way, is the only reason his connection with the Von Erichs and her is the only reason he got over as a babyface. So they figure, well, okay, she got him over as a babyface. Let's see what you can do with Kabuki, you know?
Yeah,
and it's and he's in there with Mark Youngblood. So, I mean, what are you going to do with that?
I know.
It's really when everything goes okay until you get to the first raid. And the first raid from Ken Mantell and Bill Watts. And once they did that, basically what happened was the depth got taken away. And when you would have their normal disasters, they would usually have enough talent to come in and fill the gaps. They just ran out of talent.
You know, one thing I wanted to touch upon before we get into that, it was the Texas Stadium show, and this should have been such a warning sign. I mean, maybe hindsight being 2020, but we have the match. It's the Freebirds. It's supposed to be the Freebirds against the Von Erichs, but instead it was the Freebirds, I believe, against Kerry, Lance, and Steve Simpson. And we go to the ring, and Kevin Von Erich's arm is in a sling. And he says he can't, you know, he just couldn't go. Now, we made a joke about the Viceland series with Kevin when he said, you know, oh, yeah, the Von Erichs, you know, if the Von Erichs on the card, you know we're going to be there. Like, yeah, okay, Kevin. But if Kevin Von Erich is physically in the building and cannot perform, and now the injury situation is starting to pile up with him. And, I mean, that's just tough for world-class wrestling.
Your world-class Texas heavyweight title match on that very card is who? Do you have in front of you?
Adidas was the champion against the Grappler, I think.
No, not even that good. Steve Regal.
He was the okay, now I remember this. Yes.
That is your Texas heavyweight title match. How
this is your number two champion.
I mean, come on. There's nothing here. The roof is about to fall in. Once all that wonderful depth they've had for years and years and years goes away, all of a sudden, and we're going to get to this in a minute, what happened with Chris Adams in the airplane when that would have been a minor deal 2 years earlier turns into a very big deal.
Yeah. More on that in a minute. But so, you know, Kevin is becoming more susceptible to injury. We've got that going on. And then very shortly after the Texas Stadium show, look at all of the talent that got up and left. And we are, and I hope I'm not missing anyone, but they lost some of these guys not right away, but within a couple of months, the Freebirds were gone. They went back to Mid-South after a long absence. And now you have a giant void in the guys who can feud with the Von Erichs. The one man gang left. Seth, any thoughts on One Man Gang before I go on with this?
I thought that he had a tremendous look. And, Gang was just amazing. I thought he had a great look for wrestling.
I agree. And when he first showed up in World Class, with that mohawk after, you know, having like the really long, greasy hair. When he showed up with that mohawk, I'm like, whoa, I'm looking at a star here. And I think it eventually happened, but it didn't go over big. I was like, wow, what a perfect foil for Hulk Hogan in the WWF. And like I said, I'm surprised he just didn't get there faster. But he wound up going to Mid-South very quickly after the Texas Stadium show, where he lost a match with Kerry Von Erich, where it ended up with Gary Hart being bald for life. I just blew it. That was 1985. Sorry. But anyway, my feeling is, and Sean, let me know how you feel about this. I mean, One Man Gang goes to World Class, goes to Mid-South. He had been in World Class since like January, February 1985, and I kind of thought it was naturally time for him to move on.
Well, maybe, but also keep in mind, if he stays, that's probably your world champion. There aren't a lot of choices on that roster. I thought Gang was over, very over. That was his best territory, was World Class.
I thought his best territory is Mid-South, but go ahead.
Okay. Some of the other guys left were Kamala, Missing Link, Sunshine, Hollywood Tatum, Missy Hyatt, Skandar Akbar, Chris Adams, King Parsons, and the Freebirds.
Yeah, this was now not all right away, but by the summer, I want to say all of these guys had gone and taking their place. Now this is a shift in the booking philosophy. Who took over as booker after Ken Mantell? Do either of you guys know?
Gary
Hart. Okay,
I think they brought Gary back.
All right, and they instead of having the world class fans had been treated to the Von Erichs against young acts, usually with good looking guys. First the Freebirds, then Adams and Hernandez. Now they're going back to kind of their 70s root. They brought in Abdullah the Butcher and gave him a huge push. So there's Gary Hart as booker right there. They brought in Buzz Sawyer and Matt Bourne. They, just Killer Brooks, guys that just didn't fit that mold. Seth, do you think that was a good road for them to go down?
Probably not.
Yeah. I mean, you just can't go back to – I mean, that's what the promotion was in the 70s when Fritz was on top. But now, your audience has changed. I also forgot to mention Blackjack Mulligan and Joe LeDuc, who are in and out very quickly. Sean, what are your thoughts on that kind of promotional shift where they're doing something completely different now and their audience at least was teeny boppers coming into this year?
Okay, to be an amateur psychologist here on Fritz, which, God help me when it comes to the Von Erichs, but
– All right.
But – if you're Fritz and all these, as you said, these young kids who have been in your roster just took a powder on you, all of them, the Freebirds, all of them, they just all walked. So what are you sitting there thinking? You're sitting there thinking, you know what? Screw them. I'm calling my friends up. I'm calling the guys who are always there for me. I'm calling the old vets. And here you go. He did basically the same thing that Vern did in the AWA with like Baron and the Crusher as champion, both a combined 172 years old.
It's funny. What you just said is so true. I mean, every promotion goes back to their instincts. I mean, you look at Smoky Mountain Wrestling, Cornette, but in the second half of that, he was done using new guys. He wanted guys that he knew that he could rely on. He had a couple of bad breaks with Jake Roberts and what was that huge Chris Walker that these guys just disappeared on them, and why give them top spots when, reliable guys like Tracy Smothers and Dirty White Boy are sitting right there. I think ECW got caught up in a little bit of that as well.
Sure did. They kind of got stuck in their own way. So basically when you get down to the end of the year, where is it? You have you're looking at a Cotton Bowl show that's drawing 5,000 people in October.
Yeah. And, you're right. And the last Cotton Bowl show drew like 25,000 because you had that match. Either the Von Erichs or Adams and Hernandez were going home bald. And for those unaware, that was a big deal in 1985. Guys were really vain about their hair. I want to share a bizarre wrestling memory with the Stick to Wrestling audience. I remember they did an angle where Al Madrill comes back to world class. I think Al Madrill is one of the least charismatic wrestlers of all time. I think he's terrible as a heel. He comes across as a junior high kid trying to play heel in front of his dad's camcorder. But they bring him in, and after he was a mid-card guy in 82 and 83, they bring him in as a major heel. But wait, he somehow gets in Brian Adidas's head. Brian Adidas has been billed. It's legit that he was Kerry Von Erich's friend since high school. They did track together, etc. Kerry's the one that got Adidas into wrestling. And Al Madrill gets Brian Adidas to turn on Kerry Von Erich. And I'll never forget it. It was, I want to say, June or July 1986. I'm watching World Class Wrestling, and they show the angle where Adidas turns on Kerry. And then they go back to a live interview, and it's Al Madrill kind of pasty, bald guy. And standing next to him is Brian Adidas, who has now turned into a guy who likes tiger skin jackets and Terminator sunglasses. And I looked at this and I'm like, this is minor league wrestling. I'm like, this is, world class is over. This is now a mid-major. And again, I'm saying that as someone who, you know, doesn't read newsletters. Brian Adidas and Al Madrill as lead heels. Seth, any thoughts you'd like to share with us?
Oh, so many thoughts. You go from good-looking guys like Gino and Chris to a guy that looks like Herb Tarlick, Brian Adidas. I mean, oh, my God. Him and Madrill were horrible.
They were. They were in over their heads, and whoever made that decision made a bad one. Sean, any thoughts? I actually have a couple more thoughts on Adidas.
I am declaring Adidas the dumbest person. By the way, I'm getting yelled at by Lou here. Well, in the nice way that he always does. Reminding us that it is Adidas, no second D in Texas. He was Adidas in Mid-Atlantic in 84. So now this is already more than I should have cared about Brian Adidas either way. Because, yeah, no, is he the dumbest man ever? He let Al Madrill talk him into betraying his meal ticket for the past several years. I mean, he has to be the dumbest man. Yeah, no, the only person with less personality than Al was Brian. I mean, he's like Chick Donovan without the charisma.
I was going to say, wait a minute, we're talking about Al Madrill here. When he talks, you listen.
Okay. Two of the most boring people on his roster. And yeah, you can tell Gary's there whenever you have a Kabuki rolling through 50,000, you know, people in a row on, you know,
yeah,
you know, in all these different matches, you know, Gary's booking the thing.
Yeah, really. I mean, Brian Adidas, he was someone that I always kind of knew the day was coming when he was going to turn on Kerry Von Erich. I always kind of knew that because that's just how wrestling goes. You know, going back to, I mean, Bruno Zabisco, Chris Adams, etc. This was definitely happening. But even before he turned, and like I said, I was expecting it like 84, 85. I knew it was coming at some point. And I question whether or not Adidas's feet were big enough to fit those shoes. And I was right. He just was not a top guy.
And the fans responded by an extended visit to the, you know, concession stand.
Yeah, not even the concession stand. Honey, we're staying home. So what happened to all this going on?
What happened to Gary? I mean, granted, he didn't have a lot to work with, but he's just completely lost his mind at the end of this year. I mean, with the booking stuff.
Seemed like it. Well, Kerry Von Erich was scheduled to regain the world-class World Heavyweight Championship from Rick Rude on the July 4th show, but we've got some bad news. Kerry got into a serious motorcycle accident. Supposedly, he was higher than a giraffe's ass, flying around his motorcycle, and slammed into the door of a police car that was open, and the injuries were really serious. It wasn't just the foot, which eventually had to be amputated, as we all know. I mean, he suffered a dislocated hip. That's bad enough by itself. He suffered some internal injuries, and now right there, World Class has lost its version of Hulk Hogan. And we don't know for how long. Seth, you're a big Kerry Von Erich fan. Share some thoughts on Kerry.
I think that he was just like this big, goofy jock that I was always getting into problems like that. I mean, he from what I've heard, he's always one of the nicest, sweetest guys, though. I mean, he was not very smart, let's face it. And drugs on top of that?
Yeah.
Bad combo.
It really was. And Kerry, you know, he was a great baby face in that role. of just, you know, smiling, happy, nice guy Kerry Von Erich, which I've heard, by the way, that Kerry really was more than once. Kerry really was a nice guy outside the ring, a little goofy, maybe not the highest IQ, but a nice guy regardless. And I mean, Sean, you know, what were your thoughts as far as, or what are your thoughts as far as, oh no, a world class championship wrestling without Kerry Von Erich?
I am looking at a card from September 15th, 1986 in Fort Worth. This is the talent you're dealing with at this point. You have Mike, Kevin, and Lance Von Erich against Matt Bourne, Buzz Sawyer, and Black Bart. You have Abdullah the Butcher versus the Mighty Zulu, who I don't remember.
That's Ron Paul.
Zulu was horrible.
Oh, Ron Paul. Okay, I know who Ron is.
Yeah.
Brian Adias versus the Grappler, which I don't know if Flynn can carry him to anything. Black Bart versus Steve Simpson. Dingo Warrior versus Mark Youngblood. And Steve Simpson versus Joe LeDuc. Are you kidding me?
No, I'm afraid I'm not.
What do you do with that? I mean, they just could not afford to lose any talent, never mind him.
Yeah. I mean, Kerry, like I said, he was their Hulk Hogan. By this point, Kerry had really established himself as the top, the elite Von Erich brother. And if you know, I don't know if you guys remember this, but, you know, they had, you know, an additional world class, and they show Kerry in the hospital, his foot in a cast, and Kerry's all smiling, and he's like, no, you know, I'm not going to be out that long. It's, you know, no big deal. And for, I would say, a good year and a half, they made it seem like Kerry, oh, he's a couple of weeks from being away, no worries, when they knew that Kerry, you know, he needed a lot of time to recover.
He did try to come back, like, for one match, I think, in February of the next year, 87.
Yeah, it was either January or February of 87. Supposedly, they totally Novocained him up and shoved him out there for a match against Brian Adidas to show that, you know, Kerry's, you know, he's going to be okay soon. He can do this. And supposedly, he caused enough damage to his foot and his ankle that was the last straw, that, you know, this thing, it had to be amputated. Not a good decision. But yeah, they, like I said, they made it look like, you know, Kerry was, you know, right around the corner, he's going to come back. And then the final blow, I think, to world class, Chris Adams.
Well, one step before, let me go one back, huh? One more thing about the Kerry
deal.
Go
right ahead.
Who replaced Kerry?
Replaced Kerry? No one really. I mean, Brody kinda.
Mike.
Eh.
Mike had to take a larger role.
Okay. Let's go back. Mike had suffered toxic shock syndrome in 1985, and I've said this on the show before. Mike really was getting a little bit better in the ring. No, he wasn't good, but he was getting better. And he was starting to get big. No, really. Look at some pictures of him from 1985. He was getting big. And, you know, not a coincidence that the toxic shock syndrome happened. And when he came back in 86, I mean, he was frightening to look at. He just was not ready. I don't know if he was ever going to be ready.
I mean, what was the feeling about that then, seeing him in the ring at that time, Seth? Because my memories of it, I almost forgot about it, and then I saw the video from Viceland, and I saw him again. I was like, oh my God, I remember that then. What was the feeling at the time when he came back?
I just remember that press conference, and he's looked so horrifying. And
yeah. He had, supposedly, he had a very high temperature. I mean, some sources have said 105, some have said 107. And, you know, there's no doubt in my mind he came out of it with brain damage. So now you're pushing this guy in this condition with that body, and he didn't have a lot of athleticism to begin with, and you're trying to push him as a top guy. And it couldn't have worked. I mean, and I know Fritz was very hard-headed, and he didn't listen to people, but someone should have told him, Fritz, get Mike off of TV. But anyway, Then what I believe was the final crushing blow, the knockout punch to world-class championship wrestling. We've talked a little bit about on this show before. We talked about the Freebirds against the Von Erichs feud, so there's going to be a little bit of overlap. But the decision to – okay, so Chris Adams gets drunk on an airplane, headbutts a co-pilot who's trying to get him to calm down because he's yelling at the stewardesses. Well, you don't do that on an airplane. even in 1986, Chris goes to court. He is sentenced to, I believe it was 90 days in jail. I think it was 60 days, actually, which you'd get a hell of a lot more than that today. But for one, I have heard that Chris was upset with Fritz Von Erich for not helping get him out of this jam. I'm not exactly sure what Fritz could have done on a federal level to help Chris. But Adams, you know, he goes away. He is now their world heavyweight champion. Well, for whatever reason, despite his legal woes, they put the title on him July 4th. And he's pretty quickly gone. And they make the decision to put the world heavyweight championship on Black Bart. Seth, any thoughts you would like to share on that?
I mean, they're already looking like a Bush League promotion, and then they put the title on kind of like Black Bart. Yikes. I mean, good Lord.
You know, Black Bart, he was a big guy. He was a good worker. And that's kind of where it ends as far as my praise for him goes. His interviews were not good. He was a little bit chubby. He didn't have, like, physical charisma. There was definitely something you could do with him. Not make him world champion, that's for sure. Not to beat this into the ground, but he had been on national television for over a year and a half on World Championship Wrestling on WTBS, portrayed as a guy who was no big deal. He was at the bottom of the card. Sean, your thoughts on Black Bart, World Heavyweight Champion?
First of all, you already a couple things make this decision pretty much moot, because first, you already buried your own belt before poor Bart even got there. You can tell how desperate they are talent wise that they even gave the belt to Adams. They knew that was risky to begin with.
Yeah,
and
true.
Once this thing happens with Adams, they're cooked anyway, because they were to the point where they could not stand one more guy going out, and there he goes, and it was always something dumb too. So I'm looking at the October 12th Cotton Bowl extravaganza. They do not have attendance, which I'm not surprised about. So this is the talent you're looking at that you can put the belt on. I remember one time years ago, the late Mark Nolte once said, they asked him about why Black Bart got the belt. He goes, because Ox Baker wasn't available. that was usually like the Ox Baker role for Fritz. You have Black Bart and Kevin. You have Abdullah and Brody. And we're not sure Kevin's right physically here. You have Abdullah the Butcher and Brody. You have Ron Pope. You have Ricky Steamboat. I don't know how Ricky Steamboat got here. I'm assuming that was just a one-time thing.
It was. You
have the Batten Twins, the Young Bloods, Mike Von Erich, whatever a Spike Johnson is. Crusher Yurkov. Crusher Yurkov, Brian Adias, Buzz Sawyer, Matt Boyd. Oh, yeah, those are the guys you want to give a belt to. Dingo Warrior, who was an early version of Ultimate Warrior, Steve Simpson, the Grappler, and Scott Casey. There's your talent base.
You know what, though? Picking? Here's the thing. Like, it's world class who picked their talent base. I mean, you don't go to the store, buy the ingredients, come home and say, oh, my God, I can't work with these ingredients to make a meal. It was up to them. And I have said
this
before.
They got raided twice.
What's that?
They took two
they got raided
twice.
But that
so
doesn't
you can't really
mean
blame
that
them for
you
that.
I do. That doesn't mean you have to put this world title on Black Bart. Here are our world champions, ladies and gentlemen. Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Nick Bockwinkel, Black Bart. One of these things is not like the other.
Their I've world title isn't even in the main event.
Well, yeah, I know. Well, no, the Cotton Bowl it was. Kevin versus Bart was the main event.
Yeah, my.
What?
It wasn't because of Bart. It wasn't the main event because of Bart. It was the main event because Kevin was there, and he was
the
only star they had left on the roster.
The whole thing was built around Kevin winning the world title at the Cotton Bowl. And it would have made a lot more sense, I think. And I thought at the time to put it on Lance Von Erich on the July 4th show. I think by the July 4th show, they knew that Rick Rude was leaving too. But anyway, I've said this before. I absolutely would have, before I put the belt on Black Bart, I would have called like all the wrestling schools out there and said, hey, who do you got? Who's your muscle head straight at a wrestling school that we'd put the belt on? You know who I actually would have put the belt on? Ultimate Warrior. I would have never called him Dingo Warrior. I would have brought him in as Blade Runner Rock, and he would have been my guy. We're out of
maybe,
time,
but you're
gentlemen.
Already toast. Well, yeah, you're already toast because you named him Dingo Warrior, so you can't have him as champion. That looks
like from Queens, New York. Yeah. I'm from Queens. We had all kinds of Dingo Warriors running around there. Yeah, right. Seth Hansen, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show. We really appreciate it.
I had a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Good. That's what it's all about. Sean, thank you for all you do. Next week is a super important show. It's episode number 52. It's going to be like New Year's Eve in here, the last show of our first year. I want to thank our producer, Luke Hippelman, who does a lot of stuff behind the scenes to make this show wicked good. And this show has been a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. We will see you next week.